in-depth look at the engaging debate on US, China, and global issues. This is The Heat.
A major piece of legislation will decide the fate of the U.S. debt ceiling. And in other political news, more candidates enter the Republican field for the White House. Hello, I'm Arnold Knight, and this is The Heat. So far, several Republicans have announced they're running for the 2024 presidential election. Former United States Vice President Mike Pence and ex-New Jersey Governor Chris Christie plan to join the field next week. Meanwhile, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the bill to prevent the federal government from defaulting on its debt. The 99-page deal now awaits approval in the United States Senate before the June 5th deadline. Well, we're joined now by CGTN's Sean Calebs. He joins us with more on this bill. So, Sean, this bill now goes to the Senate. What happens? I mean, can the Senate change it? Can it send it back to the House?
Absolutely. They can do a lot. And right now, they are debating, do they want to add any amendments to this? Now, that's where things get, of course, very tricky. We can tell you that Majority Leader Chuck Schumer came out and said time is one luxury that members of the U.S. Senate simply do not have to have. You talked about that June 5th deadline, and that is a deadline from the U.S. Treasury basically saying that this measure has to be signed, approved, and signed by President Joe Biden into law, or else the U.S. runs the very real risk of running out of cash and not being able to pay its bills. Now, McConnell is urging Democrats come out in support of this measure, as is the minority leader, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. A couple of procedural things. 100 members, all 100 members, must vote to fast-track this, approve it for fast-track, or else then everything's open for discussion, and it would be basically impossible to have this thing hammered out and signed by Monday. One thing being kicked around right now, by many Senate Republicans, is the money that has been allocated for the Defense Department. Republicans say it simply isn't enough. With the ongoing events in Ukraine, plus growing tensions with nations such as China, the U.S. believes it needs to bolster its military, spend more money on military. The Democrats say, look, not at this point. It's not. We just don't have the money for it. We have the largest military budget on Earth. So that is being discussed right now. The big concern is if an amendment would be brought up and approved, then this measure would have to go back to the House of Representatives. They would have to open the floor up for discussion. They would have to approve that measure, and then a conference committee would get together, try to hammer something out and eventually get it to Joe Biden. Clearly, there is not enough time for that. So the question is, will more rational heads prevail over this and say, look, let's hammer out some kind of debt ceiling package that we can all live with, move forward, and then deal with the other concerns down the road, which is what some Republicans say they want. They want another authorization to bolster the military later down the road, but that just does away with any kind of benefit you have towards trimming the national debt. So it is what it is. It's politics in the United States. It's watching the sausage being made, and the clock is ticking, and they have to find a way to move this forward.
Right, but Sean, looking at that vote that you were talking about to fast-track this bill, that's a very high bar, isn't it? All 100 U.S. senators will have to vote for the bill for that to happen. As you pointed out, the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, he supports the bill, but is there still a chance it could get derailed?
I don't know if it could get derailed. That would be a very tough sell, because I think that everybody at this point realizes, look, the Senate would have loved to have more time to hash this out. It took the House how long to approve this and then get it, and now the pressure's on, and a lot of Senate members believe they basically have to rubber stamp it, and they don't like being put in that position. But I think that if you listen to what people are saying, read between the lines, they may be posturing, saying, we need this for budget. You know, we need this for our climate fight. We need this now. We need this now. But at the end of the day, if they don't approve this, and if the debt ceiling is not raised by Monday, then they run the risk of not only destroying the United States economy, bumping up unemployment rate from 3.4% to about 8%, putting millions of people out of work, but what is it going to do to the global economy? Then fingers all over the world would be pointed at the United States. How did you let this happen? The biggest economy on Earth. It's just a mess. So I think that calmer heads are going to prevail. It's a lot of theater. It's a lot of politics. But at this stage, all the discussion is atmospheric. Until they take a vote, we don't know what they're going to do. But as I mentioned, Schumer says the Senate will stay in session until they approve this measure.
Okay, Sean, thanks. That was CGTN's Sean Calebs reporting. Well, to continue our discussion right now, let's bring in our panelists. Joining us here in Washington, D.C., Adolfo Franco is an attorney and Republican strategist. Joseph Williams is a former senior editor at U.S. News & World Report. We also have Bruce Fine. He is a constitutional lawyer. And Douglas Sloan is a political analyst and principal at the National Capital Strategy Group. Welcome to all of you. Douglas Sloan, this was a vote for the record, wasn't it? I mean, more Democrats voted for what is essentially a Republican bill than Republicans themselves. What does that tell us?
Well, I think it tells us that the Democrats are the adults in the room. The Democrats realize the catastrophic outcomes of not passing a debt ceiling bill and allowing the United States to pay on it on its bills. We'd be looking at perhaps a global recession. Interest rates would spike. We wouldn't be able to pay our military salaries, Social Security. The payments from all the government agencies might get stopped. The government might shut down, and it would be a catastrophe. So they realize that we need to move forward. We need to maintain our credit rating, which would also be in danger if we defaulted on our debt. And, you know, this brinksmanship every 6 months or a year on the debt ceiling is silly. We're the only Western nation besides Denmark to maintain a debt ceiling, and their debt ceiling is far beyond what they've ever approached. So at this point, it's archaic. It's been around for about 105, 106 years, I believe it was. It came about by Woodrow Wilson in 1917. And it's just silly in these hyper-political partisan times to have these fights on a biannual basis and run the real risk of defaulting on our debt and plunging into a recession. At this point, we should do away with the debt ceiling and just tie it to spending, tie it to different spending increases. So, you know, anytime there's a spending increase in Congress, the debt ceiling will go up. But we can't keep doing this.
Douglas, I mean, there is agreement in the House right now, and it's working its way through the Senate. But there's also been criticism, even from the Democrats on the left, who say that this bill is going to impact the most vulnerable in society the most. And I mean, there's a reference here to, for instance, the fact that there's new work requirements for food stamps, you know, to get nutritional assistance. Is that valid criticism?
It's valid, but it also expands some of those programs for veterans and for homeless people. So there was a little give and take in this bill. I understand that people are concerned. I believe they raised the age of people receiving those benefits into the mid-50s that you still have to work. And there are obvious concerns on the Democrats within the Democratic Party about this, but also some of those services got expanded. And, you know, politics is all about compromise. This is how the sausage is made. We have to understand that you're right. Going to give a little and hopefully get a little.
Adolfo Franco, there was an opinion piece in the Financial Times, which is a conservative newspaper, and this is the way the Financial Times described the vote. And I'm quoting here. It said, "Rarely in the history of fiscal brinkmanship has so much noise been made by so many Republicans with so little to show for it. The result is a win for Biden," unquote. What do you make of that?
Well, I have a lot of respect for the Financial Times and even more for my friend Douglas. But a couple things. A little bit of history here, just recent history, in the last 4 months. The President of the United States said absolutely no negotiations of any kind, a clean debt ceiling increase, period. No negotiations. How many times did we hear that from the White House press secretary? Constantly. No negotiation, not up for negotiation, no taking hostages. At the end, he negotiated. So it has to be, first, a huge win for Speaker McCarthy. There's just no question about it. That was the position of the White House and the position of many Democrats in the first instance. Secondly, I think $2.1 trillion in savings is not chicken feed, with all respect to the Financial Times, was a House bill when we only control one-third of the government, one-third by four-seat majority. That House bill that was initially passed, was that going to pass the Senate and have the president sign it? Absolutely not. Douglas is right. This was the compromise. But it, reminding everyone that the president said he would not compromise, and indeed he compromised. So I think a lot was in that bill that was very happy, made many conservatives happy. A couple of things as well, additional things. The adults in the room, I guess, Douglas, there are 50 children, Democrat children, because 50 Democrats did not vote for this bill. You have really almost have equal numbers of 71 Republicans, a little larger number of Republicans in the House, but pretty much the left and the right of the parties that wanted to stick to their guns didn't go along with this bill, and both sides had enough margin to give what we call passes.
Right.
To do it. So you have to understand that this is a Republican victory that has, remember, the alternative was a clean CR. Now we have major significant concessions, of which I will say President Biden, when he was a senator, five times insisted on non-clean, exactly what Kevin McCarthy has done. So when Douglas refers to whether it's the filibuster or the debt ceiling, when they're not in the driver's seat, they want to eliminate these things, stack the Supreme Court when things aren't going their way. When they're back in the minority, you will hear a very different tune from Douglas and Democrats about the debt ceiling and about the filibuster. And indeed, President Biden is an example of that five times when he insisted on concessions and negotiations when there were Republican presidents.
Okay. Adolfo, very briefly, if you can, you say it's a huge win for Kevin McCarthy, but given the level of unhappiness on the right among Republicans, how safe is his job as Speaker?
Well, I think it's going to be tenuous. I'm not going to spin anything in this program. That's why I like this program. It's going to be very difficult. I really think it would be an embarrassment to, there might be a motion to vacate, to change the speakership this early on. I mean, I think it would be very, very devastating for Republicans. But so I think that is a problem. He has to reach out and make some assurances, particularly in the appropriation strategy. That's the next step. Mm-hmm. And beyond the next 2 years, keep in mind that viewers have to understand this. The $2.1 trillion I'm talking about in savings is for the next 2 years. The expectation is that we will win the White House and control of Congress in two years, and then we can address the remaining six. Okay. But to the short-term question that you're asking, yes, I think it's going to be a very big challenge. But the question is this. If it's not Kevin, who I know, who is it? Who is the next speaker? Obviously, you're not going to get someone that represents only 50 or 60 or 70 members, and 150 are not on the Freedom Caucus. So that's the challenge for the opposition.
Okay. Joseph Williams, let's look at some of the concessions, if I could call it that, that President Biden had to make to get to this deal. I mentioned the fact that there's new work requirements for food stamps. The IRS would see some of its funding cut by about 25%. It's around $21 billion. The repeal of clean energy provisions, which was in that initial Inflation Reduction Act. There'll be cuts in student relief as well. But of course, everyone agreed that the Pentagon needs more money. So how will this look for the president politically?
Politically, it's a mixed bag. I mean, I concur with everything that everybody said ahead of me in that it's a compromise that both sides can claim some victory, both sides can claim defeat. Ultimately, President Biden saved the economy from defeat. He had to walk back his word a little bit in that he was not going to negotiate. So that two-fisted, bully pulpit kind of president that progressives were hoping for didn't really show up here. And the pragmatic centrist get things done candidate, or president rather, very much was in the room when all of this was going on. I think that there were a lot of problems with communicating the message. I think the Democrats were kind of caught wrong-footed in even considering the fact that they had the luxury that the Republicans were not unified enough to pass a congressional resolution addressing this debt ceiling bill with Kevin McCarthy as speaker. So I thought that they underestimated the fact that McCarthy was a weak speaker. I thought they underestimated the fact that they could have gotten this done last year when they had control of both the House and the Senate. It didn't happen. Biden was forced to come in and clean up a bit of a mess. His communication was a little flat-footed. I think all things being equal, he gets credit for not having the economy drive off into a ditch. But as far as political capital is, he had to spend some. So ultimately, I believe for him, it's going to be a wash.
Bruce Fine, great to have you with us. The Guardian newspaper, which supports the Democratic Party, did an analysis of the bill. and had this to say about President Biden, and I'm quoting here again. It said, Biden could also claim vindication for his underlying theory of his presidency that in the age of polarization, it takes an apostle of bipartisanship and a 36-year veteran of the Senate to reach across the aisle and make deals with his opponents. Do you agree with that, that Biden is the, as the Guardian says, the apostle of bipartisanship?
No, I don't think it's Biden. I think that in very large issues, for example, defense, which absorbs 85% of discretionary spending, there basically is no difference between Republicans and Democrats. You don't need to be bipartisan. Everyone's in favor of a military-industrial security complex. Everybody thinks, you know, China and Russia, Putin and Xi are the bad guys, and we have to be the policemen of the world. And that's why the military budget continues to spiral, oftentimes greater than what the president proposes. So I think that despite, you know, the theatrics that suggest that there's these enormous differences between Republicans and Democrats, I think 80, 90% of that is just a mirage. They agree on most of the things. And when they talk about the Republicans demanding a $2 trillion cut, they're not talking about cutting the actual budget. They're suggesting lessening how much increase there will be in the national debt. Now, we have a national debt now of $31 trillion and soaring. There's no budget proposed by Republicans or Democrats that are having that $31 trillion diminish. Why is that important? Because with the Fed and interest rates climbing, the carrying cost of that amount is going to rise from maybe $700 or $800 billion to over $2 trillion if interest rates on Treasury bills are like 4 or 5%. Unfortunately, the Chinese could be big losers too, because you have a huge portion of Treasury bills, maybe $1 trillion to $2 trillion. They're going to be worth less because you bought them at interest rates that were lower.
Right.
And so I just think this idea of bipartisanship, whatever, it really doesn't get to the crux of what I think is the pathology of American politics today. We don't have a consensus about what's really needed to get the United States back on track with a booming economy, fair taxes, and work for all. And the current system is not yielding that.
It seems, Bruce, that you largely agree with what the cynics sometimes say, that there aren't two parties in the United States. There's one party with two branches.
Yeah, or it's a little bit like George Bernard Shaw about the United States and Britain. He once said that there was two countries with a common language, you know, or one country with different languages. But I agree with that. I don't know whether I'd call it cynicism. I just think it's a description of exactly where we are. There's very, very little difference between the two parties on the major big issues, social issues, LGBT, abortion, whatever. Yeah, but the monetary consequences and the day-to-day impact on the vast majority is de minimis.
Right.
On the very large issues, they're all marching one step after the other. And that's why when the Congress shifts from Republican to Democrat or vice versa, very little changes. We talk about the debt ceiling and getting rid of it. Well, when Democrats have control, the House and the Senate and the White House, why didn't they get rid of the debt ceiling? They could do that. Just eliminate the statute by simple majority and the president signing it. They don't do that because they also know they need at least a fig leaf of discipline in order to suggest they're not too profligate. And that's why you come back with these, when we'll have 2 years respite and then we'll have this debate again. So we'll go through the same theater and the result will be similar to what we've seen in the last few days.
Douglas Sloan, getting back to the mechanics of this bill right now. So it's passed in the House, as our reporter told us, it's now making its way through the Senate. I mean, what do you expect this bill to pass in time before June 5th?
Absolutely. Both leaders of both parties, rather, in the Senate are supporting this debt ceiling bill, and they are well aware that they do not have the luxury of time on this issue, that if there's an amendment and the bill gets sent back to the House, that would buttress them right up against the deadline for passing this bill and not defaulting on our bills. And on our bills, which could send this world into recession, send everything into a recession. So, I am fully confident that we are going to get this passed. Both leaders are behind it, both Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer are behind getting this passed. The Senate, they're much less likely and much less partisan controlled in the House of Representatives. So they're more likely to understand the gravity of the issue involved. They're going to pass this bill And we're going to move on to see another day regarding the debt ceiling.
Okay, and we are going to move on as well. Adolfo, let's look at the Republican race for 2024. That's the presidential race. We have the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, has now thrown his hat into the ring. And there have been analysts who saying that DeSantis and Donald Trump, who's leading in the polls right now, could engage in something of a slugfest for the nomination. But how do you rate the chances for the Florida governor?
Well, I think he's a formidable candidate. I would not underestimate him in any shape, way, or form. It's so early, and I know that's a cliche to be used, but I remember people were talking that Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin, very similar in many ways to Governor DeSantis, was going to be the Republican nominee because he had the right resume and the right positions. Ron DeSantis certainly has those things, as Governor Walker did. He has more money raised right now, which is important, than President Trump. And anything could happen, and President Trump could falter and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think, though, you began this program with teeing it up with saying that, you know, you have other people coming into the race, other people, other significant figures, Governor Christie, which will be interesting in terms of slugfest. You're going to see a slugfest there with Governor Christie vis-a-vis President Trump more directly than with Governor DeSantis might be the case, and Vice President Pence. But this might be a replay of the playbook of 2016, where you have so many well-known Republican candidates that at the end, President Trump just wins because it's divide and conquer. I think President Trump is benefited by having many in the race, and I'm not sure that this is going to be a two-person race anytime soon. This will be, as you referred to, a slugfest. Right now, the criticisms that Governor DeSantis is, and they're early, lobbed at President Trump, have not changed much in the polls. One has to remember that in many ways, not in many ways, President Trump is the incumbent in terms of the Republican Party. He's the equivalent of Joe Biden in this regard. He was president of the United States. He's still viewed as the leader of the Republican Party de facto. And therefore, his advantage is that of incumbency in many ways. And his record is really what all the other candidates have largely, if not entirely, embraced. Very difficult to see how you break out of that.
Yeah.
Another candidate.
All right, Joseph Williams, what do you make of that? I mean, Donald Trump is way up in the polls over his competition. I mean, do you see any of the other candidates? I mean, we mentioned former Vice President Mike Pence, the former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. There's also Nikki Haley, Larry Elder, Tim Scott is also in the race as well. What will it take for them to basically overtake Trump?
It would probably take Donald Trump and leg irons for any one of those other candidates to emerge, because every time we talk about the 2024 Republican race, the only constant in any of these discussions is Donald Trump, how the candidates compare to Donald Trump, how the candidates' positions compare to Donald Trump, how the Republican voters still want more Donald Trump. And it's going to be hard for me to see anyway how anybody other than Donald Trump can capture the imagination the way he did in 2016. And even still, he's son of the bloom has gone off that rose, but it's still very, very powerful among the Republican base. We have entire state legislatures that are bending their philosophies and bending their legislation to match what Trump is talking about on the stump. So I think it's going to be a very difficult challenge for anybody to break through. The one X factor, you raised it, is Chris Christie. If Chris Christie does enough damage, and if Donald Trump has enough legal problems that Christie makes him more vulnerable, then I think it's likely for somebody like DeSantis to break through, maybe a Haley, maybe a Tim Scott, but probably DeSantis, and is going to all hinge on what happens with Donald Trump in the near term, in my opinion.
Okay. Joseph Williams, very quickly, I've got less than a minute. There's been lots of talk about a third party candidate in the upcoming election. Is that likely? And I don't think there's many people who are saying that a third party candidate will win the election, but how would it impact the other two candidates?
Well, again, we've been here before. Ross Perot comes to mind first and foremost. I think it could divide the Republican and Democratic centrist votes, which arguably everybody's fighting over the middle third.
Right.
If it divides the middle third narrowly enough, and if they have a candidate that captures the public imagination enough, it could make an impact. Okay. Whether or not they can find that person remains to be seen. Yeah. I have not heard very much about anybody that seems like they would raise so much as a ripple in this crowded field.
Okay, and that's where we have to leave it. Thanks to all of you for being with us. I'm Anand Naidu in Washington, D.C.